Happy Monday, everyone. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and welcome to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. This evening, I am so honored to be speaking to Cassandra King. She is an award-winning Southern fiction writer of some esteem. You may know who her late husband is. His name is Pat Conroy, who most of you who've heard me talking about my favorite books know that he was my favorite author of all time. We're going to be right back with Cassandra, so please don't go away. Much for being with me tonight. I so appreciate it. It is a dark and stormy night, evening here in Southwest Florida. I hope where you are safe and cool and comfortable. I had the distinct pleasure and honor of meeting Cassandra King in March at the Southwest Readers Fest. She's absolutely the very definition of a Southern belle. Her beautiful Southern prose is so heartfelt and so heartwarming and so lovely that she's received accolades throughout the literary community. I was graced with a copy of her book called Moonrise, but there are many others in her library, including The Sunday Wife, Queen of Broken Hearts, The Same Sweet Girls, along with Moonrise, another one that's called Making Waves, and she is doing a follow-up to The Sweet Girls. I cannot wait for you to hear all about Cassandra. Cassandra King, welcome to Authors on the Air.
Thank you, Pam. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to talking
Thank
to you.
You. Thank you. I'm so glad that we had the chance to meet in person. What a delight it was. And wasn't it fun being on the water and having that huge literary festival there in Fort Myers?
Oh, that's my favorite. Yeah, it's one of my favorite festivals. So as we get around to these different festivals, we sort of can't help it that we get the ones that we feel more at home, you know, doing. And this one feels so intimate, yet it's a very large, you know, star-studded festival. So it's really great.
It truly is. It truly is, and I'm so lucky to live, you know, 5 minutes away. And every year, this is my Christmas and Easter and happy 4th of July all wrapped up into one for the one-day festival that is, by the way, sponsored by the Lee County Librarians. We have a fabulous, as you well know, library system here, and before I could afford books, I spent many a day in the library. So I'm glad that it brought us together, and I'm so thrilled that you're here. I want to talk a little bit first about Moonrise, which is the book that you gave me, and I adore that book. I adore Moonrise because it's such a unique story the way you tell it, but maybe it lands a little close to home in the very beginning. We're not going to give any spoilers. Will you please tell listeners about Helen Honeycutt in Moonrise?
Okay, so Moonrise is my latest novel, and I really have to admit that I enjoyed writing it in some ways more than I enjoyed writing some of my other books, because it was a little bit of a departure for me, in that I decided, or I didn't quite decide, it was more like it came about, that I realized that the story that I was planning on doing with Helen Honeycutt as my protagonist, the main character, and one of the main voices in the book, was sounding eerily familiar because I wanted to do a new wife coming into a situation where she feels very uncomfortable. She feels unaccepted by her new husband's friends and family, and she is very intimidated by the presence of the previous wife who died mysteriously just a year previous. So I was doing this, working on this, and all of a sudden I thought, hey, this reminds me of Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier.
It really does.
And so it turned out to sort of, it's not a retelling of Rebecca at all, but it's not. To be my homage to a sort of a tip of the hat to that wonderful novel that I discovered as a teenager, then I just read over and over again. But unlike Daphne du Maurier's novel, I did give my protagonist a name.
Yes, you did.
Helen. Yeah, and so Helen, all of my main characters, I guess, or maybe even all of my characters are a bit like me, I suppose. And I really, Pam, tell you the truth, I really didn't even think about it at the time. I honestly didn't. It was only when my agent first read the book that she actually said, this is a little bit like yours and Pat's story, isn't it? And frankly, I was taken back. But then I realized that in the book that I had this woman who is, you know, sort of shy and unsure of herself and so forth, like the character in Rebecca, marrying a kind of well-known, you know, big-name journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, since it's modern day, I have him as a news commentator on CNN. Out of Atlanta, and so the parallel there with my meeting Pat Conroy, a very very well known writer, and mm-hmm. I was at the time, you know, totally unknown writer, had just published my first book, and was just, you know, kind of awestruck by meeting someone like Pat. So there's a bit of a parallel, and you know, of course it's fiction. It's totally fiction. For one thing, his family and his friends welcomed me, but that doesn't make for very very interesting a story, does it? So in Moonrise, I had to have her, you know, struggle for acceptance. That was
well,
part of the whole story.
I tell you what I took away from this, that this story, other than, and we won't get to the ending because we're not giving away spoilers, but it starts out completely plausible, because those of us gals of a certain age who know other gals of a certain age who oftentimes marry for the second time into an established family and move into a home that was a prior spouse, you know, it's not unusual to have all that angst and intimidation and fear, and particularly, you know, the desire to want to fit in. But there are always ghosts, no matter how well suited
absolutely
the couple is. So you've kind of given it your own, I won't say little, because it's a really interesting twist. Will you share, please, where the title comes from? Because the story is set in the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains that I know well, and it is fabulous up there. But I'd love for you to describe the home and what Moonrise is, please.
Okay. Well, if I was going to do, you know, in this, if I wanted to do not a retelling, but an homage to Rebecca, that I hope your listeners are familiar with the story of where she goes to this old estate, the young bride does, and is totally intimidated by it and even frightened of it because it's very gothic, and there's even a supernatural element, as maybe it's even haunted. So I had to come up I can't put her in an old estate in the little town where I was setting this. And I was setting it there because it's a town I've stayed in a lot and very familiar with in the summertime. But it was only founded, you know, like at the turn of the century. So I had to put her in an old Victorian, you know, kind of old Victorian estate. And then I'm not even sure exactly where. When writers, I don't know where these ideas always come. I've talked with other writers about it and so forth. But I just wanted something unique and special about the house, but also the old spooky sort of house. And that became almost a metaphor. And that was, I decided to do moon gardens as the attraction of this house, these almost eerie kind of gardens that can only be seen in the light of a full moon, and it's these gardens where the old estate takes its name and is called Moonrise. By the the locals. So it's this big old Victorian stone, you know, mansion with turrets and all sorts of, an attic where they hear these strange noises and these long, dark halls and,
I'd be petrified.
Especially these ruined gardens, because the gardens were the special project of the lady of the house who had died mysteriously a year before, and since she died, no one really knows how to keep up the gardens like she did. So her husband just lets them go to ruin. And when
this
new woman,
the story really takes off, though.
This is where the turn really is.
And boy, do you ratchet up the suspense then. I'll tell you what, I will not say any more about that, and I won't allow you to, because I want everyone to be kept in suspense. It's absolutely a riveting book, and the accolades have poured in for you on that. Congratulations, Cassandra.
You have
been writing Southern fiction for a while now, for many years, and you have been compared to Dorothea Benton, and or she has been compared to you. I'm not sure which is the fair way to see it, but you write well, you came first, so she's being compared to you, which is great. And I know now that Southern fiction is very, very popular right now, particularly women's fiction. You really kind of were ahead of your time on that. I have recently gone through the stacks of books that I've received, and I will tell you that I'm looking at Mary Alice Munro and Eva Woods and Kimberly Lawson Roby and Karen White and Christy Woodson, who I just had on recently. So many wonderful books coming from a Southern woman's perspective. Now, before the show, you and I spoke briefly about Southern storytelling, and I really believe that there is something very unique about Southern fiction writing. Do you agree?
I totally agree, Pam. I'm not really sure that I can put my finger on what it is. I mean, I've had my little theories for years about what distinguishes Southern storytelling, and especially, I guess, women's Southern storytellers.
Yeah.
But I think it has so much to do with the South is it has its own unique history and place.
Yeah.
Whether it's actually more important in the South than it is elsewhere in the country, you know, I don't know. I don't imagine that it is, but it's perceived as more important. It's the old, you know, idea of the old home place, I think, and,
yes,
and our agrarian background, you know, that the South was not industrialized for so many years, you know, before the rest of the country was, so that
sure.
We're more, you know, in a lot of ways more of a rural population and so forth, and we have a dark history too, which you know,
yes,
of course is always lends that air of that mysterious air and so forth. And then there's the whole notion of the Southern Gothic, which, as I understand it, is just the way the place, the atmosphere, the setting, all lend itself to the that Gothic sensibility of mystery, you know, and even I want to say the strange and the
a little bit supernatural, I think.
Supernatural.
It really is.
Not, I was trying to avoid saying it, but I think that's.
But I think it is, and
part
I, you
of
know,
it, isn't it?
I think it is, and you started off by saying it's a sense of place, but I think the South and the Southern part that writers from the South write about almost is a character in itself. It is part of the history of the South, of storytelling. It is something that is done very much like Native Americans, where storytelling is told generation to generation, whether it's your history of your family, whether it's just storytelling for entertainment. It's a very unique sensibility, I believe. And I think, you know, if there's one for New England, I don't know about it. My folks are from New England, as I mentioned to you earlier.
Mm-hmm.
They were not big storytellers. They were readers, but not storytellers. So
yeah.
I think the storytelling is really something that you're born with, that it's almost genetic. It's certainly cellular, if nothing else. When you're born in the South and you have a family that tells stories, you know, regardless
yeah,
of what they are.
I certainly came from a family of storytellers. I mean, just absolutely. And, of course, I had a theory about that, too. It's, I think one reason there might be more storytellers in the South has to do with just the weather, if nothing else. I mean, if you're forced to sit outside and gather on the porch because it's too blame hot to stay inside, you know, then you're going to, you know, you're going to sit around and tell stories, I guess, instead of huddling around a fire trying to keep
a
warm.
A fireplace.
So.
I never thought about that, but, you know, even the architecture itself lends itself to storytelling because
exactly.
In the South we had these wide wraparound porches where you could have so many parties were held on these beautiful porches, and you know, they were so wide, and you had meals outside. And you're right, because it was so hot, who wanted to stay inside? So you're right. You know, it is a very, I think, place, you hit the nail on the head. And I wasn't really sure how to explain it, but I love that. And I want to talk a little bit about your work and your husband's work, because
mm-hmm.
Pat Conroy was the master storyteller from the South. I said before the show, The Prince of Tides is my most favorite novel that every year, whether I need to or not, and I always need to, I will read Prince of Tides. And when I first read it, I went back and read it out loud because his prose was so exceptional. So I wonder, when you were writing, and you both were writing,
mm-hmm.
how influenced were you by Pat's writing, and how was he influenced by your writing, do you think?
Well, I think it would be pretty difficult for any Southern writer not to claim to have been influenced in some way by Pat Conroy's writing, frankly.
That's true.
Because, I mean, you know, he just, I've read so many books by other Southern writers that I will think to myself, now that sounds a bit like, you know, it's leaning toward almost Conroy-esque, you know, sort of prose.
Right.
Because Pat was known for these beautiful, just lush descriptions. And
yes.
And he, you know, he said himself sometimes, okay, sometimes I go overboard and I'll never use one adjective when four or five will do, you know.
Right.
But he could capture a place just like no one else to me. I mean, when I first came to the Low Country, it was just like walking into a Pat Conroy novel. I knew exactly what the marshes were going to look
wow.
like, though I hadn't seen them before. They're different. I was raised near the Florida line. I was raised
sure.
in South Alabama, but just right over the Florida line there. And it looks all different. You know, it's totally different. But I knew where I was when I got here. I knew that I was in the Low Country that he had brought to life on the
wow.
pages of his books, and then his characters. See, I think that that's one of the things that made Pat such a great writer, is he had this poetic, unbelievable prose
oh,
and imagery
gosh, yeah.
and description
yeah.
and so forth. Yet, so just to have that would be enough. You know, I would read a book that he wrote if nothing happened in the whole book, you know, just because that view. But he had
his
the story,
prose, yeah.
too. He had the story.
Yes, he did.
And then he always had fascinating characters. I can't think of a stock character among them, you know.
Right.
Instead, they were all unique, and they all stay with me. I mean, I felt like I knew them as well. So, yeah, I'd have to say that I was definitely, you know, influenced by his writing style. Now, I don't think there would be the only thing I could say he often said about his being influenced by mine would be more about my work habits, because Pat was it took him a long time to write a book, as he freely admitted, partly because
wow.
He had to kind of feel the spirit moving, you know. And if he didn't, he would
really?
Go days at a time. Yeah, you know, just kind of say, I just went back to my desk and I wasn't in the mood today and just didn't feel like it. And so then he would comment several times on how I always made my deadlines. And I would say, well, Pat, I thought you had, I mean, I didn't know I had a choice. And he would say, oh, I, you know, was only 3 or 4 years behind on my last one or something like this, you know. And
wow.
he would say, you know, you're able to come in and write because you have a deadline, and I don't pay that much attention to a deadline. So maybe I'll start trying to take more of a page out of your book about that.
So interesting. I want to tell you that his writing influenced me so that when I was doing my thesis, I wrote on The Prince of Tides, and I will tell you, I got an outstanding review for it, but I know the first line of his book by heart because I love that book so much that I've read it out loud. So The Prince of Tides starts with, "My wound is geography. It is also my anchorage, my port of call." I don't know anyone who could start a book like that and immediately grab you by the shorts and you're hooked. That was it. What was your life like with Pat when you were with him when he was alive? Would you talk about him a little bit, Cassandra?
Sure. I like talking about him now, actually, you know, because I do miss him so much.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, we had about 20 years together, and we really and truly, don't mean to romanticize anything now that he's gone, but the truth is, I think because we met later in life and had already had all the rough parts of raising families and all this stuff behind us, that we came together at a good time in both of our lives, a time where we could really just sort of settle down and enjoy each other and enjoy our writing and our time together and so forth. And so it just worked out so well for us. We each respected the other's writing demands, and maybe in ways that neither one of us had really felt in our previous. I had been married before, and then Pat had been married twice before, and it's hard to be married to a writer because you live in your head so much. And you have to have solitude. I mean, think about it. You cannot go to a party every night. You can't, sit around and have afternoon tea with your spouse every day and then go out and do all these things together and so forth and have any time to write.
Right.
Yeah, you just really have to live in your own head a lot and have a lot of solitary time to write. And that's tough on a marriage. And understandably, it's not something that everyone can accept. But since Pat and I understood that about each other, it really made things work very well for us, I think.
Well, I'm so glad. I'm so sad that he's gone, and sad for you. I want to talk about Same Sweet Girls because I'm fascinated by this book. I'm fascinated by all the photos you have of the Same Sweet Girls party and at the house. It was just lovely. And I also want to talk about the follow-up to that book. So let's talk about Same Sweet Girls first. Would you give listeners a little taste of this book, please?
Sure. This is my third book, and I had threatened to write it for quite a few years because I belong to a group of women that we have been calling ourselves the Same Sweet Girls since we went to college together. And we started meeting after college. We start out once a year just having lunch together. And then there was a small group at first, and our group began to expand because we'd say, "Hey, you remember so-and-so we graduated with, so forth. Well, she would like to come along." So we're, a fairly large group now. We have about 20 of us. And we get together every year, and we have for 50 years. More than one. So we've lived through all of these, young wives, raising kids, going through various marriages and all the, you know, tragedies and all this thing that happened. We were scattered all over the country, but we still come together at least once a year, and we claim that we're still the same sweet girls we've always been. So when I decided to write this book, I decided to have three voices, six characters. I just had to distill some of our personality traits into six characters and then have three voices of these characters. And they're sort of prototypes, I guess, of the different, you know, personality types of women.
Sure.
I'd say she's the governor's wife of Alabama, and she's the beautiful, elegant woman who harbors a secret, something from her past that she doesn't want anyone to know. Aha.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And then we have the young woman, the kind of sassy Southern woman that's always speaking her mind, but she's always, her mouth is always getting her in trouble as well. And plus she's kind of a flirt. And so she's been around the block a few times, and she's been around about one time too many because she finally gets herself in some trouble with that. But she's kind of a, you know, beloved character anyway. And then we have the artist, the fragile artist type that has had a very heartbreaking, you know, upbringing, and then I just made a terrible mistake in her marriage, and he took her child away from her, and all this other stuff. So these are just, I think, little bits and pieces of all of our stories that in some ways become everybody's story. You know, everybody that's ever had a difficult marriage or didn't have the best upbringing in the world or maybe made one too many mistakes in their relationships, you know, these kinds of things. And so that's what I wanted to do with the book, The Same Sweet Girls, is to sort of show this universal link that we have and the importance of friendship in getting us through these things.
Oh, I was going to say, women friendships are so critical. And you know, Cassandra, I'm so glad you said that because I've been thinking long and hard about women friendships, particularly these days, because to me, I don't know if it's just my thinking about it, but I find it sad that young girls, little girls nowadays, are raised differently than you and I were, because we had our best friends that we've clung to all these years. I'm still best friends with a girl I grew up next door to, and we met when we were, I think, 5 years old, she tells me. She knows, I don't remember, but she's just always been there, and this is all this time later. And, you know, girls that we've always had, is something very special about women friendships, isn't there? It's not like guys who've known each other for a long time, but I don't know what it is, but there's something so unique about women friendships. I want to say to listeners, you have to go and look at Cassandra's website, because she has a photo album there of the same sweet girls. And Mr. Pat Conroy is at the head of every picture. He's front and center. I think he enjoyed the same sweet girls as much as you did.
He got a kick out of that. Yeah, that was the year that we came to Fripp Island that I posted. Gosh, that might have been something like 2010 or 8 or something. I don't remember exactly.
2006
oh, was
it
that
is what
far
it
back?
On the 2006.
Photos.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. How about that?
So, but he was for us. He just enjoyed
he
those
girls.
He was
the bartender,
he had
too.
Heard
I saw that.
Yes, he had heard about all
he
of
was
them, and he couldn't wait to meet them.
You know, I didn't realize that Pat was quite that. He was quite a tall man. I did not know that.
He was 6 feet tall, yeah.
My goodness, yeah, he's a big guy.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. But he was very happy surrounded by all those women, as any man would be.
Who
wouldn't
be?
Of course. So, yeah. Cassandra, so now you're writing kind of a follow-up to the same Sweet Girls, but you're going to impart some wisdom that the Sweet Girls know, and I think that's so brilliant. Are you working on that book? Is it on the back burner? What's happening
with that story? It has been released. It's called The Same Sweet Girls Guide to Life. And then the subtitle, this is what my publisher wanted to call it, The Same Sweet Girls Guide to Life, and I went along with that as long as I could do the subtitle, which is Advice from a Failed Southern Belle. I'm very flattered that you said I was a Southern Belle, but I'm afraid that the hoop skirt never really fit me. I tried to be the perfect little lady like my mother wanted me to be, but somehow I just never quite made it. I just always had this rebellious streak, and I guess that's why I turned out to be a writer.
Well, good for you. I'm so glad. What is next on your agenda? When will we be hearing from you again?
Well, I have a couple of projects. I started out working on a new novel, and I got about 6 chapters into it, and then I put it aside for a while when Pat got sick, and I got involved in that and so forth.
Of course.
Then I really wanted to do something that I thought I would do eventually anyway. I wanted to write a cookbook memoir because one of the things that
cookbook
Pat and I
memoir.
Enjoyed, yeah, we enjoyed cooking together so much. And he wrote, you know,
wonderful.
A cookbook. And I was thinking,
that's
one of the things that I'll do one of these days, but I'll write it about our life together. And then it was cut short, you know,
So
after that, it just felt like this is what I needed to do. It was sort of a healing thing. So I've been working on this cookbook memoir, and it's brought back so many wonderful memories of, you know, these occasions.
Love and food. You know, what's not to be adoring about that? I love that.
Yeah.
We are so close to the end of our time, and I don't want to keep you any longer, but I want to keep you for a long time. Do you mind if I do 5 quick questions and 5 quick answers with you?
No, that'll be fine.
Okay. So, whose book are you reading right now?
Oh, goodness. I'll have to tell you that I'm not going to be able to remember the name of it, maybe not even the author, but it is a thriller. I have to tell you also, I'm judging a contest of literary thrillers. And boy,
wonderful.
I just read, this is the 3rd one of them, and this one is fantastic, and people are going to know, if anyone out there has read this, they're going to know what I'm talking about, because it's about, of all people, Thomas Edison and, George Westinghouse. And,
really?
And you never think that they were suing each other for the rights to the patent of who invented the light bulb. And that just sounds like, who on earth would want to read that? But this young man has written this book about it, and it's been made into a movie. I think his name is Graham Moore. Seems like I remember that, but I can't remember the name of the book right now. But it's really good.
Oh, good. How fun. How fun for you.
Uh-huh.
When you're by yourself, whose music do you crank up really loud on the stereo?
Oh, goodness. you're going to get me here. Okay. I love country music, okay? And especially love bluegrass. And so I love Alison Krauss. I love Ricky Skaggs. Dolly Parton. And so I've made this little bluegrass station of all my favorites, and that would be most likely what I'm going to be playing, especially while I'm working.
Good for you.
I like to have it in the background. Yeah.
Oh, good for you. That sounds great, though. I love that. But I like all kinds of music, so that's fine with me. I'm good with that. What would we be surprised to learn about you, Cassandra?
Well, I can read the tarot cards.
Really?
So
see, now that's a very Southern thing too. That's a very Southern thing.
It ties in with my fascination with the supernatural, I guess, and the gothic and the dark and mysterious and so forth.
Oh, girlfriend, I'm calling you one day. You're going to do a reading for me, okay?
Okay, I'll do a reading for you.
That's so funny. When you talk to young writers, what do you tell them is the best thing, the thing they must know about writing? What must young writers know? What advice do you give?
Well, I guess the main thing that I used to teach, you know, creative writing to students, and
sure.
So you know, I would say write what you know, because that's such a cliche. But the thing is, what we know can also be a product of our imagination, and so
sure.
to not be afraid to go with where your imagination takes you. And if it takes you, you know, someplace that you're not comfortable, or if your writing takes you someplace that you're not, that's probably what you need to explore. So just,
yeah.
You know,
that
yeah,
makes sense.
Just get into what your story is. Your story is not going to be someone else's story. Don't you know, feel that you have to tell your story a certain way. It will tell itself the way it needs to be told.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I like that very much. My last question to you is, let me think of one. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I have a couple in mind. What do you do in your time away from writing and listening to bluegrass and playing with the tarot cards?
Oh,
what is something that you love to do?
Well, I think I've already let the cat out of the bag on that one. Is that I love to cook, and so many things to me. It's relaxing, but it's creative.
Yes.
Then, I mean, I like to eat as well. I've known some cooks. I mean, I've got a grandson who's a chef. He's the skinniest little thing you've ever seen. Yeah.
Well, you're tiny too, Cassandra. You're tiny. So let's not go there. You're tiny.
Yeah, right. But, you know, I think you have to really enjoy the whole experience, you know, if you're going to get into it.
I agree.
But
I love to cook too.
Yeah, love.
I have
love
one bonus question for you. Just
okay.
One bonus question. And would you ever considering writing out of your genre? Now I know you're doing the cookbook memoir, but
mm-hmm.
that's a special project. Would you ever consider writing strictly supernatural or writing a thriller? Is that something that interests you?
I would not be surprised if I didn't give my hand at this one of these days, because I mentioned, you know, this contest and reading these thrillers,
yes,
as a judge.
Yes.
And
yes.
I mean, I think what fun. Wouldn't it be fun to see if you could,
yes,
do something like that? And then I've always wanted to write a real ghost story. I mean, I have the hint of the supernatural in Moonrise, but I think a real ghost story would really be fun too. So, you know,
oh, and
yes,
I think you're the perfect
the
one to tell it
yes
to. I think you'd be perfect for it. The beautiful Cassandra King, award-winning Southern fiction. The literature is absolutely gorgeous. The prose is so special. I love reading your books, Cassandra, and I'm so grateful that you came on my show. Will you come back when you finish your next project?
I certainly will. I hope that it will be sooner rather than later.
I as do I, but you know, when it happens, and
that's
just
right
the way of writing, isn't it? That's just
it
the
is
way of writing.
It is indeed.
The delightful Cassandra King, thank you so much for sharing your memories of your late husband, Pat Conroy.
Thank you.
And
thank you,
Pam, for sharing
so
your stories, too. And I will be in touch with you about that tarot, okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Have a
it
lovely evening,
okay,
Cassandra.
You
thank
too
you so
good
much.
Night.
Good night. Good night. And that's our show for tonight. Tomorrow I'm speaking to Brian Freeman. I hope that you'll join me then. Have a great evening. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.